The December 2009 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics is now available. Executive Editor Summer Johnson joins us to talk about it on the Bioethics Channel. Hello, Summer. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Two target articles in this month's edition on placebos in clinical practice, raising questions about whether deception is moral within ethical limits and whether they can be effective without the use of deception. Talk about that.
Yeah, we have great target articles this month. We were very lucky to have two wonderful submissions, both on the ethical limits of physicians using placebos in clinical practice, one that's more theoretical and the other looking at the empirical research that's currently being done about the ethical limits of physicians using these placebos in clinical care. And I think that these two articles diverge pretty significantly. The research done by Dr. Foddy suggests that the AMA should change its policy about physicians using placebos, and that, in fact, this is something that physicians can do within ethical limits. On the other side, Dr. Miller and his colleague think that the jury is still out, and that, in fact, only in one very limited case for pain management and in the case of acupuncture, do the empirical research suggest that we could do this within ethical limits. So we have two very different viewpoints here within the bioethics literature, and so I think that's why we wanted to put them together and show that there's actually quite different viewpoints here within Bioethics itself. So that's what we try to do here at AJOB, is to show where there's a significant debate.
It was interesting with Dr. Foddy. He was thinking there were appropriate ethical limits for using placebos within certain circumstances. Dr. Miller and his colleague asked specific questions about it, whether or not it actually is effective, whether the placebo is effective, and whether or not it can be effective without the use of deception. Interesting questions.
Yeah, I think they are interesting questions, and I think that's the one we struggle with the most, is whether or not physicians can, in fact, deceive or should, in fact, deceive their patients. And I think that's the one we grapple with the most, because we think about physicians being these all moral pillars of the community, and whether or not they ought to deceive their patients. And I think placebos, we think about the fact that they are inherently deceptive. But I think that's not necessarily true. I think sometimes there's just something about giving someone a pill. And whether or not you think about it being a sugar pill or not, there's something about getting up in the morning and ingesting something that affects people. Whether or not you know it's a sugar pill or not, I think there is something about that. You got something from your doctor. There's something about walking out of the doctor's office and having received that piece of paper and going to the pharmacist that is healing for some people. But I do ultimately think where Foddy comes down anyway is that deception is okay. And I think that that in every case, a doctor would not be wrong for having deceived. I think for many of the ethicists who wrote in that they're not entirely comfortable with that. And I think many patients would not be entirely comfortable with that. But we certainly know from the empirical data that many doctors do deceive. Previous data earlier this year showed that something like 60 to 70% of physicians have said that they have prescribed placebos for patients. So
as long as they see some benefit for the patient.
Right, exactly. Presume. So right. I think that the goal here is that physicians still think that they are doing right by their patients. They still are holding to that ultimate maxim, which is to do no harm. So I think that the goal here is not so much to think about it as deception, but in fact to have to be adhering to the penultimate maxim, which is to do no harm.
Sounds like there's going to be more discussion, more debate on this issue.
Absolutely. I think that nobody has made the ultimate decision yet about whether deception is okay or whether the use of placebos in clinical practice is okay. I think there'll be much more empirical research on this, and I think that bioethicists will still grapple with this decision, as will physicians, for a long time to come.
A second series of articles in this month's edition, the December 29 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics, address ethics in animal research with a focus on the three R's, replacement, reduction, and refinement alternatives.
Absolutely. I think what was so great about this article is that effectively the authors were trying to argue that for animal research, there should be a parallel to what we have in human subjects research, that no one who is doing research on animals and publishing in the academic literature should be able to do so without having a statement about how the animals were used, and that they could not do so without adhering to the ethical principles of animal research, which are the three R's. And so I think this is a very interesting proposal. We know that there's great controversy in the use of animals in medical research, and I think that putting out there the notion that animal researchers should have to adhere to some kind of ethical principles, and that being forced to do so when they are publishing in the literature might be one way of making sure they're doing so, is a novel one.
Is this breaking new ground then?
I think so. I think that, to my knowledge, that there has not been forced any such policy. I think that in the animal world and in the research world, there are not such standards for publication. When we're talking about clinical research, basic clinical research, when I read this literature, I see that people talk about that animal studies have been done. I don't hear any disclosures about we actually did make an effort to reduce or refine or replace the number of animals we used in this study. I read that we did this research in mice and we did this study on 325 rats and we did the following. I don't ever see these kinds of ethical disclosures. I know that, in fact, people are required to adhere to ethical standards when they are doing ethical research, but I don't see that they are required to make those disclosures in the journals in which they publish. So I think it's just one step further by the animal ethics community and the research ethics community to ensure that these researchers are doing that. And I think it is an important step. It's just that extra mile beyond the institutional review boards, the IACUCs as they're called, to make
sure. As opposed to IRBs for humans.
Exactly. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a great proposal. I don't know that it would happen, but if journal editors of the biomedical research journals were to take this up, I think it would be a really great step forward.
Isn't this where technology and research is going, using animals more and more rather than human beings? And then we had all of the debate over stem cell research and such, and now talking about using stem cells from animals for the benefit of human research. So it's going to become more and more important, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It's the first step when we do basic science research. We test things in animals first. We do them in cells, we do them in animals, and then we have to do it in humans. It's what we have to do. And, of course, people who are very concerned about animal rights are up in arms about the use of animals in research. But it is what we have to do in order to make progress in science. So if there is something else we can do to assure people that we are taking every step we can to make sure that animals are not being unnecessarily harmed for the progress of science, I think we should do it. So I would hope that journal editors would read this and consider it as that next further step we could take.
Another theme of the December issue of AJOB, human life extension, and maybe what we've been talking about leads to that. Placebos, animal research, all for the idea of extending human life.
Absolutely. And I think what these authors have been doing is talking about if we're going to be thinking about extending human lives, that we can't do so in a bubble. We have to take the next step and talk about it as a community, because if we're going to be talking about living 150 years or 200 years, that has an impact on the broader community. It has an effect on our public policies. And so what these authors are really asking us to do is, don't we have to have a broader social discussion? And if we are going to do that, how would we do that? You know, would we do it in town halls? Would we do it in some other way? And what are the questions we have to ask? And so on our cover, I think I put some kind of cute question about, you know, am I going to live forever? You know, and who should I ask? You know, so that's the kind of thing that we would need to be doing. But I think it's a very important thing to be thinking about. We know from our basic statistics in public health that, of course, our age has been steadily increasing over time. But with the new technologies that are out there, it's only going to continue to go up.
Before we know it, January 2010, what can we expect from the January 2010 issue of AJOB?
From AJOB, we're going to have some very exciting target articles. We're going to have a target article from two of the physicians involved with the Ashley X case, a case from about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years, I think, a case involving a very, very young girl whose parents asked to have her sexual organs removed as well as her breast tissue. And the ethics committee at the University of Washington got involved in that case. And it was a very, very controversial case at the time, all over the media. And two of the physicians involved in that ethical deliberation have since then written about that very, very difficult decision by the parents. And so that's one of the articles involved. We're going to have some very interesting deliberation, including from one of Kansas City's own, John Lantos, is writing an open peer commentary in that issue.
Our old pal, John Lantos, right. What will John be writing about?
John is actually going to be writing about that it wasn't about so much the issue of stunting her growth, which was one of the things that the committee wanted to do, but in fact that they were trying to remove her reproductive organs, which was the biggest thing that the couple was trying to do because they had concerns about her being sexually molested and other things that they were trying to prevent, because their goal was, of course, to keep her about at age 5 or 6 was their penultimate goal. So that was the biggest concern. And so the rest of the issue is addressing some very interesting cases. And so it's going to be a great first issue of the year, looking at CPR and DNR policies across the pond, as we often call it, and whether or not those policies can be changed or revived in light of some of the interesting things that are happening in the UK by some Vanderbilt researchers, as well as some very interesting things as well. Also in January, I'm very excited to announce that we're going to have our very first spinoff journal, AJOB Neuroscience, is going to be launched, and under the leadership of Paul Root-Wolpe, who's the director of the Emory Center for Ethics. And that first issue of that new sister journal of AJOB will be launched as well. So
and then you have one on primary research coming out soon,
that's
too.
That's right. So we're also going to, in February, AJOB Primary Research is going to be launched. And that journal will focus on empirical research in bioethics, and we'll have studies on a wide range of topics on clinical research, public policy, et cetera, about 8 to 10 articles in that journal as well.
What prompted this expansion of ethical discussion into these arenas?
Well, what we've seen is there's just been a very broad expansion of the disciplines in bioethics, and particularly in empirical research, as well as neuroscience, and that we've just had an overwhelming response in these two disciplines in particular. And as the field has grown and matured, so has the readership of AJOB, and that we've just had more manuscripts than we could possibly publish in any given year, particularly in these two areas. So we decided along with our publisher that we needed to expand. And so as AJOB goes to a full 12 issues every year, we also will have these two new journals, and hopefully each year we will continue to expand and add new journals in the subdisciplines of the field of bioethics, where we see our readership expanding and having new manuscripts being submitted to us that we simply can't continue to publish them all. We get many, many more submissions than we can possibly accept every single month and year.
Sounds like a good problem to have.
Absolutely, yes. And so please keep them coming. Everybody who's listening out there, please keep sending us your manuscripts. And we hate to turn away the wonderful manuscripts that we get. We just can't publish them all. So we plan to keep expanding and keep growing. And so we're very excited about our two new journals.
Summer Johnson is the executive editor of the American Journal of Bioethics. For more information on current and upcoming editions of AJOB, visit bioethics.net. That's bioethics.net. You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, go to practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. I'm your host, Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.